Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Thank you. Hello. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but throughout the world, but also to welcome to the program four exciting, delightful, and talented players of this game. Sitting on my right, we have Paul Merton and Lisa Tarbuck. And sitting on my left, it's Sue Perkins and John Sargent. Please welcome all four of them. Beside me sits Trudy Stevens, who's going to help me keep the score and blow the whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Radio Theatre in the heart of Broadcasting House at the end of Great Portland Street in London West One. And we begin the show with Paul Merton. The subject is how to audition. 60 seconds starting now.
Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York, and all the clouds that lowered in our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. I auditioned for RADA back in the 1970s, and that was the Shakespeare speech I did. I wasn't very good, but there was something about the audition process that I enjoyed. It was being examined by professional eyes. So even though I didn't get into that...
Sue Perkins, you challenge.
I fell down on speech. Some hesitant stumbling.
I was all right when I was talking Shakespeare.
Yeah. I know.
There's a lesson in that.
I'd have given you the job, to be honest.
Yeah. I would have done as well. They were looking for a caretaker. That was unfortunate.
Sue, correct challenge. We call that stumble hesitation. So you have 33 seconds and you tell us how to audition starting now.
The best way I've found to get a job when auditioning is to ask the director if I may participate in the casting couch, whereupon they look with abject horror, ask for the small blonde girl and give me the job, just so they don't have to see me lying or reclining on that said sexual piece of apparatus. I think possibly the best way now is to just be good, the old-fashioned way of doing something sincerely and properly.
Paul Tallant.
There was a repetition of two ways.
Well, listen, Paul, correct challenge. You have 11 seconds. You've got the subject back again. How to audition starting now.
Later on, I tried some words from Look Back in Anger, written in 1956 by John Osborne, one of the original angry young men. And...
Lisa challenge.
Rubbish. Anger and angry. I was just a bit too eager on the buzzer. So, is that a point off?
Was that?
No. I was too eager.
I love it when women get too eager. But it's an incorrect challenge.
Yep.
So Paul has another point, and he has the subject. And there are only 2 seconds left, Paul. How to audition, starting now.
I would like to mention angina, because that hasn't...
In this game, whoever is speaking as the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Paul Merton, and it doesn't surprise you to hear that he is in the lead at the end of that round. Lisa, will you begin the next round? The subject is a fortune teller. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
About 10 years ago, I had the need in me to consult a fortune teller. I took myself off to a woman who'd been recommended to, and I found her...
John Challenge.
A woman who'd been recommended to. It's not English.
You're absolutely right.
She was actually consulting the fortune teller about that precise problem, John, and you've just brought it back.
John, I agree. It is actually English, but what you're saying is not correct grammar.
It's rubbish,
well,
is what you're saying.
English is grammar, isn't it?
I'm in the wrong show. I just walked into quote-unquote.
John, as you haven't played it quite as often as the others, I tell you what we'll do. We'll be generous and say, yes, it's a correct challenge, and you have the subject, and 51 seconds, a fortune teller starting now.
A fortune teller usually has to give you good news because you go to a fortune teller to be cheered up. They know this. They realise when you come in, you've got a problem. The difficulty is if you arrive at a fortune teller and you don't have a real angst inside you, then they get really worried. You're putting them under an enormous test because they wonder, what is it about this creep that has forced him to come into my little place with my little crystal ball?
Right. Oh.
Yeah, so before we all lapse into a coma, I think the... someone open a window. Repetition of little.
Too little there, John.
little place, yes. I mean, you do have a very seductive voice that does make us doze a bit.
This isn't one of those panel shows, is it, where the new guy gets torn apart, is it?
Bring on the wolves.
We don't tear apart, but we do have fun at each other's expense.
Yes.
I think that puts it quite nicely. Paul, the correct challenge. 19 seconds, a fortune teller, starting now.
One night on Blackheath, I walked towards this tent. The moonlight shimmered off the canvas as I realised that inside was Madame Arcati, a woman who could see beyond the ordinary measures of our time and space. She was a clairvoyant. She was able to tell me...
So Paul Martin was again speaking as the whistle wind gained that extra point and has increased his lead at the end of that round. And, John, we'd like you to begin the next round. And this has obviously been chosen specially for you. The subject is Two to Tango. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
Two to Tango, what a very boring subject. The next thing people are going to talk about... Strictly Come Dance.
Sue Challenge.
Hesitation.
That was a definite hesitation,
was it?
John.
Sorry, yes. John.
Good, excellent. That's got me out of it.
Sue, 53 seconds.
Out.
You tell us something about Two to Tango, starting now.
It takes two to tango, unless you're John Sargent, in which case it takes 47,000 people. Movement, choreography, a winch, some several dancers littering the place, disporting themselves to make him look like the gyrating god that he is. Some may have said he didn't quite have the chutzpah necessary to carry off those tight tights. However, I was one of the viewers who phoned in time after time. That's a repetition of time.
Lisa, you picked it up first.
Time
Your
after
dementia,
time.
Yeah. Susan.
Time after time. Right. So, there are 30 seconds, Lisa. You tell us something about Two to Tango, starting now.
It takes two to tango is a wonderful phrase, really conveying that one might have an idea, but being bucked up by a second person could really see that thought be carried out into an actual tangible object, for example. If it was a project, maybe you've had an idea that something would work. The other person, the second person...
Sue Challenge.
It was a repetition of person.
Yeah, yes.
It was very philosophical.
Yeah, yes. I was taking notes, so it was interesting.
11 seconds, Sue. And you tell us something about Two to Tango, starting now.
Yes, his tango was magnificent, but who wanted to see the foxtrot? I know I did. Seeing his dance partner, whose name eludes me, because she was trying to do it properly, and therefore it was no fun whatsoever. I can't remember the name, however...
So Sue Perkins, speakers of whistle weighing again. The extra point, she's moved forward. She's one behind Paul Merton, who's still in the lead. And then John Sargent and Lisa Tarbuck both have one apiece. And Sue, will you begin the next round? The subject, what shall we do with a drunken sailor? There are 60 seconds, starting now.
What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor? Put him on the Jeremy Kyle show, where, of course, they're doing a drunken marine special, and he'll be forced to take a DNA test because a transsexual prostitute will at some point have claimed that while he was on the Source on voyage, he may...
John Challenge.
Hesitation on the Source.
On hesitation?
Yes.
She goes quicker than anybody else on the show.
We can take him. We can take him. Come on.
No, John, you're very keen. I don't always encourage keenness, but that was a bit too keen.
All right.
40 seconds still available, Sue, for What Shall We Do With a Drunken Sailor, starting now.
Of course it comes from a maritime rhyme, a sea shanty, if you will. I don't know much of it, apart from the fact that it's early in the morning, which I presume is early in the morning. One never knows. Not...
Paul Challenge.
Oh, you buffoon.
A repetition of in the morning.
Yes.
Yes, that morning. Would be it, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's right. So, Paul, you got the subject. There are 30 seconds available. What shall we do with a drunken sailor, starting now?
I don't really remember what the answer was in this particular song, but I do recall that we had to sing it during music lessons when I was about 9 or 10 years old. And Sue has already given us the tune, but I seem to remember there was something about clap him in irons with a hose pipe in him or something like that. But whatever you think should happen today, the Royal Navy looks upon drunkenness amongst its recruits severely. They do not like it at all. They'd much prefer if you were... I don't know what they prefer.
Lisa, you challenge first.
Just a little bit of hesitation.
And you've cleverly got in with 4 seconds to go, Lisa.
Thank the Lords.
What should we do with a drunken sailor starting now?
My favourite is sea shanty. Oh!
Keen, do you see
giddy,
what I did
giddy,
to myself?
Giddy, giddy.
Silly, stupid girl.
At least you're not repeating
you
time.
It was hesitation, I'm
afraid.
It was hesitation, yes.
It was.
Come on, it's a game.
It is a game. Luckily, it's not a profession.
I'd be skinned.
Oh, it's a game and we love playing games. 2 seconds for you. What should we do with a drunken sailor starting now?
Rum, whiskey, brandy to be avoided at all costs. Don't give in. Anything
like that. Paul Merton was again speaking as the whistle went. Gained that extra point, has moved forward. He's still in the lead. And Lisa Tarbuck, it's your turn to begin. And the subject now is the worst thing about the 1980s. And there are 60 seconds starting now.
Well, apart from Exxon Valdez and Bhopal, the assassination of John Lennon, luminous socks, Cabbage Patch Kids, Miami Vice, the fashion influence of the programme Dynasty, Joe Dolce, St. Winifred's School Choir, a part.
Very good. Now, that was a great effort there, Lisa, but unfortunately, you paused and Sue got in first. 41 seconds. The worst thing about the 1980s, Sue, starting now.
The worst thing about the 1980s was the jumper my mother gave me, which was batwing, if you're trying to be technically specific. However, it made me look as if my arms merely went from my wrist to my hips and I was attempting to break the land speed record. It was in puce, not a colour fashionable then or indeed now. And embossed on the front, Snoopy. Never liked that particular character. I have a fondness for dogs, it's fair to say, but not ones that are plastic and over my hooters. So I went into school on the one day of the year we were allowed to wear our own clothes, and the great thing was about that cartoon animated figure on my chest is that people knew where to aim for when they were throwing things at me.
So, Sue Perkins, with points in the round and also one for speaking as the whistle went. And Paul, your turn to begin. Will you take the subject now? Oh, yes, a lovely one. A poker face. 60 seconds, starting now.
Lady Gaga's hit, I suppose that's repetition. She had... So I said Gaga's, you see, Gaga's. Not Gaga, Gaga's.
I was thinking it was a bit of hesitation after Gaga's.
Yeah.
No, I don't think there was, actually. Really? No. Yeah. I'm a bit... it isn't repetition, because it's all one word.
No, that's true.
I mean, there's two
syllables. The Gaga wasn't repetition.
No, no, right. If anybody wants to write in about that, please don't send the letters to me.
Yeah.
So, an incorrect challenge, Sue. Paul, you've still got a poker face. 57 seconds starting now.
I don't play poker, but a poker face is prized amongst the players that do indulge in this particular card game. If people cannot read the expression on your face, they can't tell whether you have a winning hand or a losing one. That's as far as I can tell is what poker means. That's tell twice. No, he's noticed. Three times.
But Sue spotted it.
Tell three times.
Tell three times.
41 seconds, Sue. A poker face, starting now.
To play poker well, you need to be inscrutable. You need to have a visage that no...
Lisa, challenge.
Two needs.
I'm very needy.
Too many needs.
36 seconds, Lisa. A poker face with you, starting now.
One of my favourite givers of a poker face was Captain Mainwaring, or Mannering, off of Dad's army. His joyful visage sometimes was the source of much rib tickling in our house. Rib tickling. Clearly mad.
It's wonderful the things that come out under pressure, aren't they? I mean, verbally, I'm talking about.
I was going to say. Speak for yourself.
Sue, your challenge.
There was obviously such a sort of fond childhood, playful memory, some would say, of the rib tickling, that there was quite a long pause after it.
There definitely was, Sue. Right. You have 23 seconds. Tell us something about a poker face, starting now.
Say you got a flush. Your face mustn't do the same. You got to keep it real. No one in the room must know that underneath that incredibly calm exterior lurks the beating heart of an imminent champion. Thankfully, I'm not possessed of such a poker face. Otherwise, I'd play the game more frequently than I do and would be bankrupt. For although I could possibly keep my eyebrows from moving, unfortunately, I've got a twitchy nostril, which gives it away. And whenever I lie, there it goes.
So, Sue Perkins, another point as the whistle went, is creeping up on Paul Merton again, which is an interesting situation, even on radio, and only 1 point behind him. The other two are trailing a little. And Lisa, it's your turn to begin. The subject now is music lessons. Tell us something about that in this game, starting now.
It's a great thing, an accomplishment for a young girl to have music lessons, because it means that she's got something to talk about when being introduced to her accomplished family. Oh, let Lisa play the guitar for you. She's wonderful at it. Sadly, the said instrument was a little bit too big and the teacher in question was half a pervert. I didn't last very long. However, I do wish I'd learnt the harp. Failing that...
Sue... What's your challenge?
Repetition of learnt.
Yes, right, it was too learnt.
Too learnt. Too I learnt. Should have said learned.
I'm intrigued by this half a pervert concept. Yeah.
Can you have
Did he take the weekends off or something like that?
Sue, a correct challenge. 36 seconds on music lessons, Sue, starting now.
I had piano lessons with a whole pervert. He had one tooth and he whistled sibilantly every time he tried to reprimand me, which was frequently because I was rubbish. Scales, endless arpeggios, chords, never learned a tune. I would watch people who didn't learn with the half a sex maniac.
A repetition of learn.
No, it was learned and learned.
Oh, was it? Oh, yes. Oh, sorry.
God, he...
One has to listen.
Lost none of your rigour, Nicholas.
No.
Fair enough.
No, right. So an incorrect challenge. 17 seconds, music lessons starting now.
So odd was he that I decided to take up the flute. Now, there's no reason on earth you'd want to play that particular instrument. Hardly the sort of thing you'd want to get out at the end of a riotous party and have a go on. It's no good. What can you do apart from play What Shall We Do With a Drunken Sailor? No one wants to hear that. It's not cool. It's not funny.
Right, Paul Charles.
It was It's Not twice.
It's not.
Quite quickly.
It's not cool. It's not funny. Right, oh, Paul, you've got him with 1 second to go. On music lessons starting now.
I study the piano before...
So, Paul Merton again was speaking as a whistle when gained that all-important, not all-important, but one of that extra point. And he's just keeping one ahead of Sue Perkins and a few more ahead of John Sargent and Lisa Tarbuck. And whose turn is it to begin? I think it's probably yours, John. Yes, it is. Oh, here we are. Good one for you, John. Dinner party etiquette. You have 60 seconds starting now.
Dinner party etiquette was taught me by my mother. She was very strong on certain subjects. Serviettes. Oh.
Hesitation.
Yeah, hesitation.
As a full stop, wasn't it?
I was just thinking about my mother and I was thinking how awful it all was. I was suddenly thrown back to my childhood.
I feel terrible.
You know, it was quite a moment there.
Yeah.
And so I hesitated. My mother
was it
came
the serviettes? Was it serviette abuse?
Well, yeah. She...
No, they would be called napkins then, definitely.
But also, if you said serviette, she would just stiffen so much.
Mm.
The whole dinner would be ruined.
So you should say napkins?
You should certainly say napkins.
After the show, we'll rock and cradle you and just get a sense of wholeness going.
No, just talk me through it all over again.
You should have kept all that in the show, John. Unfortunately, Sue got in with the correct challenge of hesitation. 52 seconds, Sue. Dinner party etiquette starting now.
I know very little about this subject. Having said that, I have a vague recollection you pass the port to the right and transfer the vimto from the left. That's all I remember. Usually...
Paul Charles.
I don't know much about these things, but isn't that deviation? Isn't the port passed to the left?
It is. It's passed to the left.
Is it?
I told you. I mean, at least I was honest. I mean, do I get a point? Just cretinous and ill-mannered.
So, well listened and correct challenge, yes. Port goes down the left. And an easy way to remember, why was I?
Yes.
On a ship, the left-hand side is the port side.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, doesn't make any difference. You couldn't care less, could it? 41 seconds. Dinner party etiquette is with you, Paul, starting now.
Never sit the Earl of Gloucester next to the Duchess of Devonshire, because the Duchess of Devonshire is a pub instead. Oh, no. I don't care. I had to say it twice for the sake of it. I didn't care.
I was going to say the aforementioned, but you know, never mind all that.
Lisa, you challenge first. Yes, repetition.
Two 37 duchesses.
Seconds.
Two duchesses. Two
Don't
duchesses.
Make a right.
No.
Lisa, dinner party etiquette starting now.
My dinner party etiquette requires you to have a very large drink when you come into my house and then a few nibbles, egg crudités, possibly a dip, and I'll cater for every diet. If you were to tell me you're allergic to wheat, that's fine by me. I'll give you celery and some wasabi and pea dip. If you were...
Four chance.
We've had two dips.
You've got two dips.
A double dip?
Yeah.
Have you heard? It's a double dip. Two duchesses and a double dip.
Yeah.
Over here.
We also had too few words, I'm afraid.
Well, you should have challenged
him. Can't be a bit just, too pedantic on this afterwards. Game, Uncle John.
Right.
Oh, no. We'll talk afterwards.
Right. Okay.
20 seconds, Paul. Dinner party etiquette starting now.
I hadn't been to a dinner party till I was about 30 years old, which seems a very long time indeed, but while I was growing...
Sue, challenge.
Is that a deviation, then?
Why?
Because you haven't been for a dinner party in so long, you wouldn't know contemporary dinner etiquette.
Doesn't matter.
I'm just testing.
You can still know it. You can study it, you can read it, you can be instructed in it, but you needn't actually have experienced it.
Thank you, Yoda.
Moments of great wisdom.
Sometimes you look at me. Sometimes you look at me, Susan, and say, "What's the Wally going on about?"
As I said, I don't have a very good poker face. Yeah.
So, Paul, incorrect challenge. 14 seconds. Dinner party etiquette starting now.
You have to remember where the knife and fork goes, either side of the plate, and you should start by using the outward utensil. That was one thing that I was taught when I went to my first dinner party after I had reached a magnificent time in my life.
Right, so Paul Merton was again speaking as the whistle went. Gained that extra point. He's moved forward. He's about three or four ahead of Sue Perkins, and he's far more than that ahead of Lisa Tarbuck and John Sargent. But there's a lot of time to go yet. Sue, we'd like you to begin the next round, and the subject is My Vegetable Patch. Tell us something about My Vegetable Patch, starting now.
My Vegetable Patch is one of the few things in life I am truly proud of. The first year I set it up, it was only good for thistles, and I had no donkey, so no use. However, when I embarked on the second season, great things happened. A little care and attention to the brassicas, staving off the cabbage white fly, seeing the club root affecting the turnips, and making sure that should I ever go again, all these problems would be eradicated in an organic and pesticide-free manner. I cannot tell you, cynical as I am, how my heart was gladdened as soon as I saw the tiny tendrils of carrot first appear from the clods of earth that I had dug with my own patient hands. I didn't bother with a spade. Why do so when you can get your hands into the grubbiness of it all? Have you seen celery? I have. And it's not just stuff that you bought. No, it was carefully cosseted. All the millions of salads, the mizuna, rocket, the incredible cherry tomato.
Well done.
It's quite obvious that Sue actually does have a vegetable.
I do have a vegetable.
It's an
extra,
isn't it?
I'm cheering myself up now.
A real tour de force, it really was.
Thank you.
And as someone else who loves growing vegetables, I was with you every moment of the way. Living it all. You actually went for 60 seconds without being interrupted, so you get a point for speaking as the whistle went, and you get a bonus point for not being interrupted, and so you move forward, and you're two behind Paul Merton, who's in the middle. I don't know what's funny about that. It's a logical fact. So we've got the final round. We're back with you to begin, Paul, and there are 60 seconds available, as usual, and the subject is Prohibition. Tell us something about Prohibition in this game, starting now.
The Act of Prohibition was passed in America in 1920, making it illegal for any one person to buy a drink. It was not a particularly successful law. It was repealed around about 1933, I think.
Sue Challenge.
Was that a repetition of law?
I don't know. I wasn't listening, to be honest.
I thought it was a law that was passed in in 1920,
it was a law
and then
you're quite right.
And then
they passed the law in 1920.
It wasn't a very successful law.
And they repealed the law.
Yeah.
Right. Well, listen, Sue. All right. Only one point to go now. 49 seconds available. Prohibition with you, Sue, starting now.
It was the time of the Great Depression, and the problem with such phases and economic downturn is everyone really wants a drink. It wasn't a very good idea...
Paul Challenge.
Well, it wasn't the time of the Great Depression, because it was from 1920... The Great Depression was 1929.
He's right. It was about 10 years before the Great Depression. Yeah. But they must have seen it coming and fancied a vodka.
Yeah. They did.
I think it was brought to an end during the time of the Great Depression. So, Paul, a correct challenge. And there are 42 seconds available. Prohibition starting now.
There's a Lauren Hardy film called Pardon Us that was made early in the sound era, and they get sent to prison for trying to sell prohibitive alcohol to an off-duty policeman. And this film, or as I said before, I might have actually said movie, I can't remember, was actually really redolent of what was happening in 1930s America. The very act of prohibition was an extraordinary success for the Purity Leagues, who had been debating for many years that we should see the end of tobacco being smoked in public, and also the temperance society and movement should have a full hold of what people were putting into their body. Look, they said, alcohol is no good for you. Why not instead look...
So Paul Merton brought that round to an end and also brought the show to an end. So let me give you the final situation. John Sargent, who hasn't played the game very much before, and you didn't get very many points, I'm afraid, John.
I fell asleep during the long minutes.
But we enjoyed having you and we enjoyed your contribution. And Lisa, the same with you, my darling. Whatever you say is always great fun.
It's the medication I'm on.
Sue Perkins did incredibly well. So at the end of this round, we say, Paul, you were in the lead. So we say, you are the winner this week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We've already arranged for you to say a final thank you to these four fine players of the game, Paul Merton, Lisa Tarbuck, John Sargent, and Sue Perkins. I thank Trudy Stevens, who's kept the score and blown her whistle so delicately. We thank our producer, Tolusha Galani. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we're indebted to this lovely audience here at the Radio Theatre in London. So from our audience, from me, Nicholas Parsons, and from this lovely team, goodbye, thank you, and tune in the next time we play Just a Minute!